First, we'll start out with a story. It's called The 84th Problem. Once a farmer went to tell the Buddha about his problems. He described his difficulties farming, are either droughts or monsoons complicated his work. He told the Buddha about his wife, how even though he loved her, there were certain things about her he wanted to change. Likewise with his children. Yes, he loved them, but they weren't turning out quite the way he wanted. When he was finished, he asked how the Buddha could help him with his troubles. The Buddha said, "I'm sorry, but I can't help you." "What do you mean?" railed the farmer. "You're supposed to be a great teacher." The Buddha replied, "Sir, it's like this. All human beings have 83 problems. It's a fact of life. Sure, a few problems may go away now and then, but soon enough, others will arise. So we'll always have 83 problems." The farmer responded indignantly, "Then what's the good of all your teaching?" The Buddha replied, "My teaching can't help with the 83 problems, but perhaps it can help with the 84th. "What's that?" asked the farmer. "The 84th problem is that we don't want to have any problems." And that is the end of the story. And now I'm going to turn to an article that appears in the February 2014 issue of Today's Woman. I think that's a local magazine. And the article is written by Bob Mueller. He is Senior Director of Mission and Stewardship at Hospirus, the community hospices of Louisville, Southern Indiana, and Central Kentucky. His bio here says he has 3 books available and he has a website. The name of the article is The Hard Reality, subtitled "Complaining Doesn't Make Problems Go Away." I won't be reading the entire article. There's just more here than we have time for. So we'll just get started. The problem with too many people, regardless of age, is they either don't understand or don't accept the fact that life involves a certain amount of hardship and unfairness. They fight against it instead of adjusting to it. They grumble and complain both to themselves and others about the magnitude of their problems. They talk as if their difficulties are unique and seem to feel that life is easier for everyone else. Complaining doesn't make problems go away. It only makes them worse because it has a magnifying effect. Complaining is an attempt to unload our problems on others, a way of refusing to accept them as necessary conditions of life. This life being hard, life being unfair, life involving pain, is one of the basic teachings of the Buddha. He had said that one of the 3 characteristics of existence, alongside impermanence and no self, is suffering. And the entirety of the Four Noble Truths is dedicated to this understanding of suffering. Pain is inevitable. are separated from the ones that we love. We are having to associate with those that we don't want to be around. We get sick. There's old age, and there's death. Pains of life, they are inevitable. But we don't have to look at the Buddha's truths for that, to understand that for ourselves. We can look at our own lives and see the truth of that. However, the suffering, that pain on top of pain, that is optional. Let's continue with the article. Recently, I ran into a former student who's now in her 30s. She told me about what she had been doing and then added, "I'm glad I had you as a teacher." Of course, I was flattered, but I was also curious. I asked her why. She said with a knowing smile on her face, "Because life is hard and it's not fair." She said that simple truth had helped her through some rough spots in her life since finishing high school. Then she reminded me of the time when she first heard that concept in my class. When she was a sophomore in one of my world religions classes, I had given a particularly challenging assignment. I warned the students in advance that I was going to make them do two things teachers weren't supposed to make their students do: think and work. About halfway through, someone said, "This is hard." We then proceeded to have a wonderful discussion about philosophy, life, work, pain, joy, and success. Now, years later, this former student probably doesn't know the assignment, but she does know that life is hard. More importantly, she accepted it. I think that we can all experience, and we all know for ourselves, that there are different levels of acceptance. There's that level of resignation where it's like, all right, whatever, okay. I gotta do this, so, all right, fine. And then there's that level of just merely complying. And then there's that level that's wholehearted, complete acceptance or oneness. And I'm sure there's all kinds of gray in between. We as spiritual practitioners are aiming for oneness. Roshi Philip Kaplow, the founder of the Rochester Zen Center, he is my Dharma grandfather. In his book, Zen, Merging of East and West, he said, "Nothing can menace your peace of mind if you become one with it." It is this oneness, this non-separation, is true acceptance. No holding back, no gaps. So what prevents this oneness? And what prevents this oneness is the complaining, the anxiety, the thoughts. Our attachment to our thoughts is what prevents this oneness from occurring. When we are embroiled in our thoughts about a situation, regardless of whether the situation for us is adverse or whether it's something that we desire. There's separation. There's me here and the situation out there. In adverse conditions, we're pushing the situation away, putting distance between ourselves and this other that we don't want. We are creating a duality. There is a, you know, I don't know this name. It's Dati. I looked that up to try to see who this person was, but I couldn't find it. But it doesn't matter. This person, man, woman, sums it up quite well. This is what is said. Worldly afflictions are as extensive as an ocean, noisy and clamorous, but they all arise from the thoughts in your own mind. When not a single thought is conceived, you are liberated from them all. Worldly afflictions arise from the thoughts in our own mind. So not only does this point to the source of our troubles, but it also tells us how to be free. When not a single thought is conceived or attached to, then we're liberated from our worldly afflictions. Now, this acceptance, this liberation that I'm speaking of, it's not about being a doormat for our circumstances and allowing whatever to happen. Of course, if we can make changes, if we can manipulate circumstances, then we do that. But that's not always the case. We're not always able to change things. So how do we to transcend those difficult circumstances? There is a koan in the Blue Cliff Record collection of koans. The Blue Cliff Record is one of the two most famous koan collections. There are 100 cases in the Blue Cliff Record. This is case number 43. And it addresses this very thing. How do you transcend difficult circumstances? And this is the case, quite short. A monk asked Tungshan's the master, when cold and heat come, how can we avoid them? Tungshan said, why don't you go to the place where there is no cold or heat? The monk said, what is the place where there is no cold or heat? Tungshan said, when it's cold, let the cold kill you. When it's hot, let the heat kill you. Now people think that koans, Zen koans, are puzzles, riddles. They're not. They are attempting to express the inexpressible. They are revealing Buddhist truths in the form of dialogues. Dialogue between a monk and the master, as in this case, or between two monks or two masters. And they demonstrate truth. And because they are expressing the inexpressible, they are not to be taken literally. We have to see into the words of what is being said. And to the student that's working on a koan, they maintain this questioning mind, this very open mind full of wonder. And when they receive some insight, and it's usually through their own experience that that insight comes, as they are just living their lives, they demonstrate their resolution, their so-called answer to the koan, to their teacher. And that demonstration is coming out of their experience. It's a physical demonstration. The whole practice of Zen is a physical practice, regardless of whether one is working on a koan or doing a breath practice or doing shikantaza, which is, as I understand it, similar to vipassana practice. Now let's look more closely at this particular koan. A monk asked Tungshan, "When cold and heat come, how can we avoid them?" He could be talking about cold and heat. He could be talking about hunger, poverty, environmental destruction. He could be talking about associating with those that you don't want to associate with, not being around the ones that you want to be around, old age, sickness, death. When cold and heat come, how can we avoid them? Tungshan said, "Why don't you go to the place where there is no cold or heat?" The monk said, "What is the place where there is no cold or heat? Who wouldn't want to know that? Where is there a place where there's no discomfort, no anxiety, no fear?" Tungshan said, "When it's cold, let the cold kill you. When it's hot, let the heat kill you." Again, let's not take this literally. What is this you? What is this me? What is this self that we're protect, that we're always talking about? Many people define themselves when they're asked, "Who are you?" About their bodies, their history, their likes and dislikes, conditioning. Let the cold kill you. When there's no you, standing apart from the cold, what's left? Okay. my own teacher, love the saying, and he says it all the time. When you can't get out of it, get into it. When it's hot, so how do we let each situation kill in this most positive, non-separating way? We do that through meditation. And I'm sure that it is this way in Vipassana, that the practice of Zen meditation isn't just something that is done on the cushion for an hour, 30 minutes, or whatever each day. It's a way of living. It is the way of awareness, of oneness. Of not being separated from this moment, being completely present. We take up a body posture and a mental posture that's relaxed, alert, attentive, one that's centered and anchored. And whenever the mind wanders from the moment, regardless of what that moment is, we return to the present. Whatever it is that we're doing, whether it's formal meditation or everyday activity. And in that way, we train the mind to remain present. It becomes uncomfortable for the mind to wander. This practice of letting go is also called just this. When we are in the moment, we stop creating problems for ourselves. We stop creating our own troubles through our attachment to our thoughts. There's one Theravadin Buddhist nun, Aya Kema, said, "The greatest support we can have is mindfulness, which means being totally present in each moment. If the mind remains centered, it cannot make up stories about the injustice of the world, or one's friends, or about one's desires or sorrows. All these stories could fill many volumes, but when we are mindful, such verbalizations stop. Being mindful means being fully absorbed in the moment, leaving no room for anything else. We are filled with the momentary happening, whatever it is, standing or sitting or lying down, feeling pleasure or pain, and we maintain a non-judgmental awareness of just knowing." Now back to the article. Once we accept the fact that life is hard, we begin to grow. We begin to understand that every problem is also an opportunity. It is then that we dig down and discover what we're made of. We begin to accept the challenges of life. Instead of letting our hardships defeat us, we welcome them as a test of character. And I think this, there's a lot of truth to this. When we realize the freedom of acceptance, we lose our fear, our anxieties dissolve, we become much more open and more willing to step forward. One Tibetan Buddhist teacher said it this way. He said, adverse circumstances test our courage, our strength of mind, and the depth of our conviction in the Dharma. There is nothing exceptional about practicing Dharma in a good environment and atmosphere. The true test is if we can maintain our practice in adverse conditions. One final word from Bob Newler in his article. We live in an imperfect world with other imperfect people. No one can promise us lives free from pain or disappointment, nor can anyone promise us safety or total control. But we're not alone. Every living person shares the same predicament. Every living person encounters unfairness and suffers the hurt and loss which come with it. The people who succeed in life don't escape unfairness. They just learn to accept it and manage it more constructively.